is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. Fog of war replaced by the fog of diplomacy. In these last days, we're told there are face-to-face negotiations in Istanbul, shepherded by the president of Turkey, Mr. Erdogan, and his ministers. NATO and Turkey are on the same page here to bring an end to the fighting in Ukraine, an end to the militarization of the Black Sea Basin. Those discussions are not transparent. We can only guess at the resolution between two sovereign states, Moscow and Kiev. However, we can turn to the U.S. and how it is conducting itself in these crisis moments. Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, reflecting on these last days. Rumors of peace, rumors of war, always the same. But the U.S., what do we know about the U.S. position, and how has it been enhanced or limited by the conversations the last days and weeks with our NATO partners? Mary, a very good evening to you. You traveled NATO, and there was NATO before the pandemic and NATO after the Ukraine conflict. Do you measure that the NATO's promises that it will increase its commitment to security is sincere, or is that born of the moment? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening, John. I don't see a significant change in the posture of the United States, just to start there, because we have yet to impose secondary sanctions or sanctions on banks that are conducting energy transactions for Russia, or to meaningfully cut off Russian oil and gas exports to Europe, which is, of course, one of the main financial lifelines for Putin and is largely funding his war on Ukraine. So from a U.S. point of view, we are still signaling that we're only kind of in a halfway posture when it comes to financial pressure. And I think the same could be true of the military shipments to the Ukrainian army. Those Polish MiGs have yet to be transferred over to Ukraine. There's been significant slow walking of the transfer of materiel. That's not to say we haven't transferred a large number of, you know, weapons and ammunition, et cetera, but the Ukrainians need a lot more, and we had promised a lot more. I was just up on Capitol Hill last week talking to a senator about this problem, and it just seems that there isn't pressure from the top of the administration to force people to move more quickly. There's no real urgency here, which is remarkable given that this conflict is now dragging into its second month.
And NATO, is it a new NATO, the one, or is it the one you traveled with a worry on its face?
Well, I think you've seen divisions in NATO about what to send to Ukraine and how to send it. It's a good news that NATO is discussing deployments further to the east. That's something that the prior U.S. administration had tried to achieve. We signed a defense agreement, for instance, with Poland. It's great that NATO, I think, has now found a renewed purpose in its original purpose, which was as a defensive alliance to counteract it, you know, previously the Soviet Union, now Russia, but really the same types of actors here. The goal here should be to equip Ukraine to win. And they may be doing that, pushing back on the Russians in a very valiant effort, but it needs to happen more quickly because what you don't want here is Vladimir Putin feeling like this is dragging out and that he needs to resort to more extreme forms of weaponry. That's what we need to avoid. We need a quick victory here for Ukraine, and we need to help them as fast as we can.
The battle is not entirely military or even diplomatic. It's energy. And the energy story is one that Europe ignored these last years, became dependent upon Russian energy, and that gave a boost to the Kremlin's plotting here, figuring Europe couldn't do without it. Well, maybe it can't, because Europe still continues to import and pay for energy from Russia, chiefly natural gas, but also oil flows from Russia. Now, the U.S. is an energy superpower. More than that, Mary, we are the arsenal of energy. updating the arsenal of democracy. And the battle over these next years and perhaps the battle of the century will be over energy. We export natural gas now. Europe needs everything. Does that comport with your understanding of this administration, of the commitment by several loud voices in America to the future? Are we going to be Europe's savior one more time with our energy abundance?
Well, I hope so, John, but there's no indication that we're doing that on the ground because we still have very restrictive prohibitions on the exploration in places like Alaska. You have several regulatory agencies that have discouraged exploration. You had a good statement out of the White House in these last days, but when you look at the details of what they're proposing to do, it's very vague, and it won't induce any U.S. energy producer to change their policies. Look, I'm actually neutral on energy sources. I think the market really preferably should determine what's used. And the mistake that I think the European nations made is that they allowed their domestic politics to drive choices that have now impacted their national security. So, you know, they bet on wind and solar and technologies that simply, you know, are not developed enough to safely and sustainably supply their economies. And so now they're stuck. And they also relied on producers in Russia that have used energy as a weapon before. I mean, you saw Vladimir Putin cut off gas to Ukraine in the middle of a freezing winter. So, you know, the idea that you would look at that and then say, well, let's depend on that guy, you know, for the bulk of our oil and gas supplies, that's just insane. And now you see attempts to walk that back. But, you know, we are not stepping up to say to our producers, go fill that gap, take that market share, start setting the marginal price again. It's not where the United States is, and that's unfortunate. It's a big missed opportunity.
I'm told that to the middle of this century, 2050, the U.S. demand for energy will grow. The global demand for energy will grow. All energy. Renewables will grow very quickly. There's steep curve straight up, but renewables cannot satisfy the demand till mid-century. Is it your measure that Washington, that the leadership in Congress and in both parties understands that without our fossil fuel, the global growth story is extremely doubtful? And also at the same time, our allies in Europe are going to remain vulnerable.
Well, I'm sure there are members of both parties that understand that. But the problem is that we have an energy secretary that has explicitly stated that we are in a transition away from fossil fuels and that there will be pain and that this is a necessary undertaking. So, you know, the leadership in the White House, the executive branch, doesn't seem to understand that, John, and that's very dangerous. Of course, we have elections in this country. The Biden team was elected to do this, although I'm sure no voter anticipated Russia invading Ukraine and having this massive crisis at the same time. Look, I mean, smart politicians change their minds when the circumstances change. And I think it would behoove the United States for the current occupants of the White House to say, look, yeah, we have these green ambitions, but we cannot achieve them right now. It endangers our national security. We've got to unleash our oil and gas. And in fact, that might actually, while it would alienate the progressive wing of their party, it might actually attract them more independent votes at the end of the day, especially as they approach the midterms.
And also, Mary, about the energy story, China is energy poor. Most of Asia's energy poor. It needs to import. What we're seeing now is an alliance between Russia and China. That is a very strong bond if it remains. What is your measure of that alliance? Is it convenience and as opposed to two autocracies getting together to make war on the world? Is it convenience that China pledges some kind of affection for Moscow?
No, the Chinese Communist Party has been very clear that anything that weakens and divides the West is good for China. There's no indication that I've seen that they're backing away from their support for Putin. They can allow him to embark on this campaign and observe how NATO reacts, how the United States reacts, and you know, if you're sitting in Beijing and you see these halfway sanctions that we talked about, well, what's your conclusion? Well, gosh, if the West can't fully sanction an economy the size of Russia's, how in the world are they going to sanction an economy as large as China's?
They're not. They're not. And so we should regard their aspirations as rhetoric.
I think that China will act to do anything that increases the power of the Chinese Communist Party. They see Putin as useful. They've worked long and hard to develop that relationship. And there is no doubt in my mind that Beijing in no way would play a positive mediating role in the Ukraine conflict at all.
I'm speaking with Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated. We start with the conflict zone of Eastern Europe. All of Eastern Europe now is a conflict zone. We're looking at NATO reawakening its battalions and moving towards the front. The story of China is profound here, and you'll see China often in the news these next weeks. So we turn to that next because of the supply chain once again strangling over lockdowns in China. What does that mean for the U.S.'s confidence in its future? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.